and statements expressed in the following program do not necessarily reflect those of WWDB, its staff, or management.
You are listening to In the Know with David O., informative, substantive, intelligent talk radio on 860 AM WWDB. And now, your host, Philadelphia Councilman David O.
Good afternoon. It's Tuesday, and a beautiful Tuesday it is. Hi, I'm David O. I was about to say Councilman David O., but I think you know that. Anyway, it's my pleasure to be here to host this show and have some great conversation with some fascinating and fantastic people. Today is no exception. Listen, we're going to talk to State Senator Stuart Greenleaf. He is the chairman of the Pennsylvania Senate Judiciary Committee. And he is here to talk about his work in criminal justice reform. Listen, I want you to stay tuned and pay very careful attention because he is a former prosecutor. He's also been an assistant public defender. He's been in the chairman of the Senate Judiciary Committee for 30 years. He is definitely a man about justice. He's certainly not weak on crime, but he is talking about justice and fairness. And we could start with this. No innocent person should be suffering in prison. And beyond that, we can then talk about what is the role of our state correction system. And so we'll be talking to someone who is walking, not just talking, but doing things. 20 reform bills he has introduced. If you don't know who he is, that's a problem, because if you're for fairness and justice, you should know who State Senator Stuart Greenleaf is. Then we're going to talk to an exciting world champion, Muay Thai kickboxing. Listen, he has done more than that. I think he's done every type of combat sport there is. All public wrestling, Golden Gloves boxer. He's done MMA, over 100 karate tournaments. I don't know where this goes, but Rami Ibrahim is here. He was just inducted into the New Jersey Hall of Fame in two categories, fighter and trainer. So yes, he produces a lot of champions. And then we're going to come and speak to Janet Benton. She is the author, and this is her first novel in a historical setting. It is, but a very deep and meaningful novel, really focused on the trials and tribulations of unwed mothers, somewhat treated like criminals back in the 1880s, really the difficulties they face, what is relevant about that today. And so we will be back talking with her. But first, let me thank our show sponsor, because without Weiner in Pain and Wellness, I would not be talking to you right now. Listen, they do a wonderful job of helping people rehabilitate themselves from their injuries. Maybe Rami Ibrahim needs to go check them out. I'm sure he's had more than one bruise, broken bone, and a few other things. He's a guy who depends on his body to be at his best, and you know, I'm sure he'll tell you, strong body, strong mind, strong spirit. You can check them out at the Land Title Building, 100 South Broad Street, Suite 1800. And listen, if you didn't get a chance to hear last week's show, we were talking to Speedy Morris. Do you know the name, William Speedy Morris? Yeah, he's a basketball legend. He's a legendary coach. He's at St. Joseph Press Prep. And let me think, it was his 1,009th victory. How about that? And then we were delighted to talk to Alexandria Leggett. She's the events coordinator at Technically, and we were celebrating Philly Tech Week. And then we spoke to just a fantastic woman, Aisha Winfield. Yeah, she's been in the music industry, works with big stars, but she founded a nonprofit that uses music to encourage students to stay in school, do well in school, and find out about STEM, science, technology, engineering, and math through careers in the music industry. She is the founder of JR Music Executives. Well, right now, let me turn my attention to the gentleman I just talked about. I've known of him. I've met him a few times. State Senator Stuart Greenleaf. But you know what? To my surprise, when I was going up to see him, because I was going to talk about the Post-Conviction Relief Act here in Pennsylvania, and I think it is way too harsh. What I mean is, shouldn't evidence, substantial, significant evidence of innocence make a difference? Well, under the Post-Conviction Relief Act, it doesn't. You can't get it in. And if your lawyer screwed up, you're going to suffer for that, too. Anyway, that was my topic, and he's got 20 topics, and he has been working on this to make sure we have a fair and just system. And listen, with all the talk about, you know, fairness in our criminal justice system, I was shocked because I thought I would have heard about what his work, and I hadn't. I'm a former prosecutor myself. I've been a defense attorney, now as an elected official. If somebody would have said to me, you know, Stuart Greenleaf is the one who's doing this, I would have said, hey, how can I help? Because for all the things that I may try to do, I'm a city official. Criminal justice reform happens at the state level. It's got to happen in Harrisburg. And so let me introduce you a little bit to Senator Greenleaf. He is a state senator. He has served for 40 years, and guess what? He is not running for re-election. So the bad news is if we don't get this stuff done soon, we might not get a chance to do it. He has been the chairman of the Senate Judiciary Committee for, about 30 years. And he has been on many types of task force and organizations that have dealt with a wide variety of issues, especially law, the judiciary, but also criminal justice reform. And let me say that, among the bills that he's dealt with includes bills that allow for DNA evidence to come in, scientific evidence, safe harbor, you know, for human trafficking victims, especially children, so that they can be protected. He is also dealing with the Post-Conviction Relief Act because guess what? That the time period, if you get new evidence of innocence, you have just a very short time to get that into the court, and then it doesn't matter. So we need to extend that, and that's what he's trying to do. He has also dealt with also issues of trying to reform our prison system so that people who are there can receive a good treatment, and for those who have mental illnesses, addiction, and other things, we handle them appropriately. And so, you know, for some, criminal justice reform means being weak on crime. It certainly doesn't mean that. There is no point in punishing innocent people. Senator, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you, Councilman, for inviting me to be here on your show and to have an opportunity to educate people in regard to our prison and our criminal justice system. I've been involved in it for decades. I was also a prosecutor, prosecuted murder cases, and also defended murder cases. And I was the chief of the appeals division of the Montgomery County DA's office.
Yes.
And so I handled hundreds of appeals as well. So I was pretty tough on crime.
That's your reputation. Tough on crime. And
I'm the least likely person you would expect to be here talking about prison reform and criminal justice reform because of that. But I thought I was doing justice.
Mm.
We thought we were doing justice. But it's actually counterintuitive that what we were doing, we had an overall approach to criminal justice and treated everybody the same, and everybody is not the same. And so as a result, there's not much difference on just put them in jail and it'll change our society. Well, it doesn't. And it changes some of those people who are nonviolent. I'm not talking about violent offenders who do belong in jail.
Right.
And we want to make our streets safe. But putting nonviolent offenders in jail and incarcerating them changes them. And so what we're doing is breeding new and more violent criminals because of the way we treat people.
Mm.
We don't treat them as an individual people. And I know it's all counterintuitive, but what changed me was the fact that I was holding a hearing on the death penalty some years ago, about 2000. And what happened was some of the advocates were saying that, well, you know, these people are subject to being executed if you make a mistake, and we have convicted innocent people in Pennsylvania. That's what they said to me.
Yes.
I didn't believe that because I knew what we did.
Right.
Almost 8 years in the DA's office is we reviewed those cases and we We looked at all the evidence. I remember I would go out with the county detectives and find more evidence to establish that person was guilty. So when they said that to me, I said, I don't believe that. Mm. And they said, well, introduce a bill to enhance our ability to obtain DNA testing, because DNA testing can prove beyond all doubt, not
yes.
reasonable doubt, all doubt.
Senator, if I could just interrupt you for a second, let me say this. Listeners may assume that DNA evidence is welcome into the court just because it's scientific evidence, but without a bill, it is not necessarily allowed in court, and you introduced that bill.
Right, and what happened was then we'll say, okay, now prove it to me.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Well, 2 years later, they did prove it to me. We had people that we had convicted that were innocent. It's unbelievable. I was really shocked by it, quite frankly.
Okay.
And I thought I was doing justice, and everyone and all around me were doing justice. And they were trying to do justice. They don't intentionally convict an innocent person if they know that. So then I had to look at, well, how do we change this?
Right.
And that's what started since 2002, efforts to be smart on crime.
Yes.
We can be tough, but punishment without rehabilitation is a failure, and we need to address the individuals that have gotten in touch with and have been prosecuted by the criminal justice system to allow them to be rehabilitated, and many of them will be.
Yes.
But what happened is, okay, the next 20 years – I was introducing mandatory minimums. I was introducing every conceivable tough on crime bill you can think of.
Yeah, prior to the DNA thing.
Right.
Yes.
And as I said, I'm the least likely person you'd think that should be here. But then we started to look at the fact that we've convicted innocent people, but then also I started to look at the rest of the criminal justice system. And how we could convict? How do we convict an innocent person? And then it gets into what's the best practices? What's the best practices to take a confession? Because people, apparently, I didn't believe this for years, that they confess to crimes they didn't commit.
Yes,
but they do.
Yes,
and you know why? Because sometimes they're 16-year-olds or 17-year-olds or 18-year-olds. The Central Park jogger case up in New York. That was a classic case there. Those kids were around near the area, and then they were brought in, interrogated for like hours, sometimes days. And they finally decided, well, I just want to get out of here, and I'll take care of this later. Well, you don't take care of it later. And so they are confessing to those types of things. So there's a best way of taking a confession, and we have to make sure that we are using that best practice. There's also eyewitness identification.
Mm-hmm.
I always thought eyewitness identification was a slam dunk, and I treated it that way.
Right.
And all of us did in law enforcement treated it that way. It's not always reliable.
Yes.
And it's all kinds. We can spend about a half an hour talking about that, mm-hmm. but we don't have that kind of time.
Right, right.
And then also, the third thing that we need to be best practices is a forensic evidence. How we handle the evidence, how we preserve it, how we have it availability, the DNA testing of it, and all that. So that's what I started out on.
Yes.
Now I'm up to about 20 reforms, and I've gone all over the nation in some conferences looking for what are best practices. And so what I have now is those bills that are pending before my committee. Many of them have been reported out. They're inappropriate. I had to go to an appropriations committee, and some of them are now being voted on by the Senate. And now some of them are over in the House now, like human trafficking.
Yes.
I mean, how do we condone how does society condone, and certainly how do we in the law enforcement community condone a child and who is then being trafficked as a teenager?
Yes.
And we treat it like we treat the And that bill, I've introduced it to stop it. That bill is now pending in the House. It passed the Senate. It's over in the House, and we're trying to get that legislation passed.
Senator, could I say this? As a former prosecutor, you know, I always said, listen, prosecution is not persecution. The prosecution has the duty, the responsibility of making sure the evidence is sound. I never like to see a prosecutor move forward on a technicality that denies the defense an ability to you know, speak of their innocence. Because at the end of the day, you know, this system is one of challenging each other, putting the best evidence forward, and leaving it to the judge or jury. But your efforts in trying to make a smart, intelligent, purposeful system, I think is so important, because when we do not allow people to defend themselves, when we don't allow evidence of innocence to make a difference, we undermine the public's confidence in our judicial system. And some of the things you've done, such as the Criminal Justice and Mental Health Reinvestment Act, and then, of course, dealing with drug-addicted persons, and then making sure, you know, your legislation that's currently in the Senate for the second time, that people who cannot pay debts and fines because they're poor do not remain in prison. They make a lot of sense to me. I think they make a lot of sense to a lot of people, and yet you struggle. It's so hard to get this stuff voted on. Why is that?
Well, because it's counterintuitive. Everybody, the average person thinks that it says, well, just put him in jail and just bury him and keep punishing them. Nowhere in our statutes is to say that a convicted person who's released from prison has paid his punishment, and then we still continue to punish them, and there's nothing in the state statutes that says that we're allowed to do that.
Right.
But society does do that, and we're surprised that they're not successful once they release. When after 20 years of doing that kind of passing those kind of bills, and there's a lot more that we don't have time to go into. After 20 years, you think that our recidivism rate would have gone down. It didn't. It went up. It was a 64% recidivism rate. That's a failed system.
Yes.
That's 64%, two-thirds of people go back to jail within 3 years in our state prisons. That's not good. And so as a result, we couldn't keep up with building the penitentiaries. We were putting 2,000 more people in jail every year, and we had built a prison to hold them, and that's $300 million. And we're in a population of the prison system went up significantly since 20 years ago. The population in our state prisons were about 8,500 people. You know, what was about 2 years ago, before we start to do a little bit of reforms, it was up to 53,000.
Right.
Now I look at, okay, well, that's okay. Well, maybe there's a reason for that, not related to what we're doing. So I asked my staff, look at the population of the people in the population in Pennsylvania. What was the increase since 20 years ago? It was like 3% at the most. That's how much increase. Well, I said, okay, now look and see what's the increase in our prisons population? 320%. Now, how's that happen? Our population isn't increasing.
Right.
But we've like got a 300% increase. I mean, I don't have to be a genius to figure out that there's something wrong there.
Right.
If it was working, it would be different, but it's not working. We still had a 64% recidivism rate, and we were spending – it was the fastest-growing Department of Corrections. It's the fastest-growing department in the state. And we're paying – we were putting 2,000 more inmates in every year. And that's like $45,000 a year. So we're paying a lot of money. And so what happened? We did a couple of changes. What we did was we saved money. We saved in the last, since 2012, $400 million in cost of ounce.
Sure.
And what happened to our prison population? And it went down.
Mm-hmm.
What happened? We started closed prisons.
Right.
And because the lower population.
Yeah, Senator, let me interrupt and just
sure.
tell the listeners, listen, it's not punishing people unnecessarily. Hey, listen, if you did a terrible crime, you should got to protect the public. There's an appropriate place for punishment, but there's also appropriate place when we know people are nonviolent offenders. They've made a mistake. They have to do their time. They come out as productive people. And then there's people who are not guilty, and they can't get their evidence into court. That, to me, is just super egregious. You know, I was in Chester prison just yesterday visiting Eric Riddick, and I've talked about his case before. He's a person that the evidence shows is not guilty, and even the Superior Court said likely here sits an innocent person, but for the PCRA, the Post-Conviction Relief Act, that needs to be reformed. And you're trying to reform that act so that people who can prove they're innocent, like Eric Riddick, can actually have his day in court. 26 years in jail this man has spent, and you know the evidence is that he's not guilty, and yet he can't get that evidence heard. And so for the listeners, you know, we got to get together and convince the state representatives, state senators to support Senator Greenleaf and to the folks in and around Philadelphia. Listen, there's a lot of people talking, but here's a man who has been walking the walk, doing the work, fighting. I think your post-conviction relief bill passed the Senate by one vote. And that's what's tough. Well, listen, Senator, I am out of time, but we'd love to have you back on. I know some other folks who would love to talk with you. Thank you for joining me. Everybody, stay tuned, because we will be back talking about fighters. We're going to talk to Rami Ibrahim.
You are listening to In the Know with David O. Informative, substantive, intelligent talk radio on 860 AM WWDB.
If you've suffered an injury from a motor vehicle crash, trip and fall, construction, or work-related accident, contact the Padova firm to speak with John Padova himself. You've heard the name. That's because for over 25 years, John has been winning for his clients. John is dedicated to ensuring his clients are fully compensated. Call 215-893-0700. That's 215-893-0700. Don't suffer more than you have to. Call John Padova today. Help is on the way.
Here at Sonny's Famous Cheesesteaks, we have the utmost respect for the founding fathers of our fair city's most celebrated sandwich. But we also understand the inevitability of time marching on. So come to Sonny's in Old City for a revolutionary take on the classic. And try the cheesesteak that Alan Richmond of GQ magazine named the best in Philadelphia. And declare your inalienable right to life, liberty, and the pursuit of cheesiness. Sonny's Famous Steaks, 228 Market.
My friends, this is Joe Krause. You've heard me on Philadelphia radio now for over 20 years, and you know I don't often endorse products or people unless they are real game changers. I want to tell you about Weinerman Pain and Wellness, located in Center City, Philadelphia. And at the end of this short personal endorsement, I want you to consider Weinerman Pain and Wellness. If you are recovering from an injury, if you or a family member has been diagnosed with a disorder that has stopped you in your tracks, or if you're like me, determined to learn about wellness while getting yourself prepared to stay healthy so you can enjoy the blessings of your family. Remember the name of this warm and caring location, Weinerman Pain and Wellness. Why should you consider Weinerman Pain and Wellness? Because they are who you expect them to be.
Weinerman Pain and Wellness, located at 100 South Broad Street, just south of City Hall. Call Weinerman Pain and Wellness at 215-988-9503. That's 215-988-9503. Call today.
Gracie Jiu-Jitsu begins with one basic premise. Technique trumps all. Proven techniques allow the weak to overcome the strong. Learn self-defense that works, all while improving your physical condition, mental outlook, and healthy lifestyle. Gracie Academy Philadelphia will help you reach your goals. Take two free classes and see for yourself. Gracie Academy, 1231 Bainbridge Street, Philadelphia. Call them 215-830-6501 or visit their website at phlbjj.com. Get started.
started at Gracie Academy, Philadelphia.
Today's broadcast is brought to you by the Philly Labor RX Injured Workers Pharmacy Network, featuring PPC Pharmacy, First Choice Pharmacy, and Precision Scripts, providing injured workers with premium products and services from the point of injury through the entire healing process. The Philly Labor RX Pharmacy Network cares about injured workers.
Every day, the men and women of the United States Marine Corps demonstrate their commitment to defend the American way of life. Since 1775, we have served our nation as a force in readiness. From combat operations to humanitarian assistance in every corner of the world. No matter where the mission takes us today, or wherever our country needs us tomorrow, we always remember the land we call home. As Marines, we take a stand for each other, for our nation, for us all, the few, the proud, the Marines.
All right, we are back. Well, listen, you're going to enjoy my next guest. Well, you'd enjoy him if you were watching him, but I don't think you can watch him anymore because I think he had his last fight, but I think that was fight 188, something like that. Could you imagine that? 188 fights? Well, listen, I'm talking about world champion Muay Thai fighter Rami Ibrahim. But listen, he does more than that. He's competed. He has over 100 karate tournament championships, Philadelphia All Public Wrestling Championship, Philadelphia Golden Gloves Boxing Championship, and as I said, listen, world champion in Muay Thai kickboxing. He's done MMA. I think he's done it all. He is originally from Silwad, Palestine, and now by way of Philadelphia, he is teaching, training, and he is was recently inducted into the New Jersey Martial Arts Hall of Fame. He is Rami Ibrahim. Welcome to the show.
Thank you, David. It's an honor to be here.
Hey, it's my pleasure. I mean, now listen, among other things, you give older guys some hope. Not that you're an older guy like me, but I mean, a lot of people figure the fight game is for like 19-year-olds, 21-year-olds, but you have been successful and winning for a long time.
Thanks to God I have been, and anyone can do it. It's not about your age. It's about your will, and I think that's in anything in life. If you have the will, you can go. It's like the saying goes, if you believe you can, you're right. And if you believe you can't, you're also right.
That's a good way to look at it. But there's also, you have to be smart. You have to be smart, have techniques and a good game plan, I would think. How does that play into to your strategy of winning and training fighters?
Being smart is the most important thing. You know, anyone can be tough. What do you do when you are tough and you are challenged by another tough person? Mm. It then becomes who's the smarter guy.
Right.
And that is in any challenge in life, it's not the tough one that wins, it's the smarter one that wins.
Mm. Tell us how you started in this.
So we came, me and so I have, we're six brothers, and I'm the youngest of six. And,
you had five people beating you up. You were forced to learn self-defense.
My three oldest brothers were here in America studying and working, and me and my two older brothers came to visit them. We were living in Kuwait at the time, and we mm-hmm. came to visit my three oldest brothers who were here in Philadelphia in 1990, a week before the Gulf War. And when we came a week later, the Gulf War started, wow. and we ended up losing everything, and this became my home, our home, for the rest of our life. So we had to start a new life, and I was the odd kid in the neighborhood, and they didn't know how to speak English, and all the kids picked on me. So I was constantly in fights, and my brother had suggested that I be put into a martial arts school to stay off the street and to learn how to defend myself.
Mm.
He told me, we're tired of you getting into fights and getting bullied. You have 6 months. After that 6 months, if anyone puts their hand on you and you don't break their hand, I'm going to break your hand. So I took his words literal.
Truly the words of a brother.
Tell me about it. And I took martial arts serious, and it Yeah, here I am, 27 years
old. What did you start with when you started martial arts?
When I started martial arts, I started in regular karate, freestyle karate. And that is how I started. And
how old were you?
I was 10 years old. It was 1992.
Okay.
And in karate, I don't know if people know, but when you go to compete, there's no full contact. It's like point sparring. You're not allowed to hit without hurting the other opponent. And so you have to be controlled. So at that age, I didn't have the skill of having self-control over my technique. I was constantly getting disqualified.
Yes.
So my master instructor at the time, he had just brought Muay Thai to the East Coast and into our school, and he suggested, hey, Rami, this is a full contact sport. I think this might be better for you. So I started it, and I immediately after they got me a competition into the ring, and I was hooked.
And now you did wrestling too, is that right?
Yes, in high school I started scholastic wrestling, and I became a Philadelphia All Public Wrestling champion as well.
What high school?
So I started in Allenley High School. My family moved to another neighborhood in further northeast. So then I moved, got transferred to Northeast High School, and that's where I continued my wrestling. I started in Allenley, continued in Northeast, and got the championship for Northeast.
Now, how did you end up in the Golden Gloves? Because this is a deviating story of going from one thing to the other, but all in the combat sports area.
Yes, yeah. And I never stopped any sport. I continued. So second year in wrestling, I began to find to notice that the more busy I was in things that were beneficial, the one that kept me off the street, and also it was like I was investing in myself and in not only my mind physically, but also my mind and spiritual level. So I started seeing looking into boxing, and I started training originally. When I first started with Joe Frazier, may he rest in peace.
Oh, Joe Frazier Gym. We just named that street.
Yes.
Glendale Avenue, you know, Smoking Joe Frazier Boulevard.
And I trained with him.
Yes.
You know, and then I continued my training into boxing at Champs with Bernard Hopkins.
Oh, wow. Wow. Some big names here. Well, let me ask you this. I mean, basically, you have, I don't know how many belts. I know it's a long list of belts. How many belts do you have?
So I'm now a 13 Muay Thai champion, and I am I have the most world titles as a professional American fighter, and yeah, I think I did okay.
They say anybody anybody can fight. The question is whether you have the will to train to fight. Everybody's got the will to fight, but not everybody's got the will to train to fight. How true is that statement to you?
It's not that true, even believe it or not, because some people are meant to be doctors, some people are meant to be teachers, some people, no matter what they want to, no matter how much they want to be a lawyer, they will never be a lawyer. It's everybody, we have to be realistic in life, you know. So as far as fighting, it's not something that any people can do. And me as a trainer, I've noticed that there's a lot of people that they love it, they would like to do it, but they just, their spirit is not there. You know, whether we want, even though it's a sport, I'm kind of sad to say it, but my mom was right. This is kind of a different type of sport with a different type of animal, and you have to have a different type of spirit to be in this sport.
Wow. Now, I've heard the term fighting spirit. You know, my father used to say that, and he used it kind of in a derogatory, negative way, like rebellious, stubborn. But once I got into the martial arts, fighting spirit meant the will to continue, the ability to keep going when all the chips were down, you know, those type of things. When you talk about a different kind of spirit, what kind of spirit are you talking about?
So, everyone, whether they want to admit it or not, everyone is a fighter, and that is not in a ring, but in life. And with that said, it's just a matter of you finding your spirit, and what I mean by that is not giving up. You know, everyone has challenges. Everybody has, those are fights. You know, whether they're, you know, you're fighting your demons in your mind, your negativity, you're losing a job, losing a family member, you're doing bad in school. So you have to find a way to understand that it's okay to lose. It's okay to mess up in life, but you have to fix it. And that is the spirit. You know, just because you lost doesn't mean anything. As long as the sun comes up, life goes on, so you must continue to go on. And that is a mindset of a fighter, and that is a mindset that every human being should have, because we all lose something, in, you know, something small, something big, but we have to know that it's okay, we have to fix it and move on.
How do you give something special to the people who you train? Because you have, I think, 20 champions with you right now.
I have over 20 champions, or about 180 students. And my best gift to them, my best teaching to them is my experience, my downfalls, and I give them that. I try to show them what I went through, the hardships that I went and seen, and make sure that they now are aware of it so they could avoid it. Mm-hmm. And that is the best. That's the best experience, you know. And I have to tell them that. Again, like I said, it's okay to mess up as long as you fix it. That's how you get better in life. It's like a child growing up. They have to make mistakes. They have to know, hey, you can't cross the street. Hey, you can't touch that oven. You know, little things like right. that. You have to make these mistakes so you could learn.
Mm. Now, you have your own gym, Rami Elite Muay Thai Gym, here in Philadelphia.
Yes, that's correct.
Where's it located?
It's located at 7249 Rising Sun, my Rising Sun, in Cotman Avenue.
Okay, okay. Well, how do people get to check you out, sign up for your gym, audition for your tutorship there?
So anyone can catch us through social media, Rami Elite on Instagram, Rami Elite on Facebook, and Rami Ibrahim for my page. For anyone listening in this area, I am all about the kids, because they're the future. If there's any child out there that is doing good in school and financial status is not so strong, I am willing to train them for free. And that is no number or quantity, because, out of all the things that I've done in my life, I understand that the best success, how you measure success, is by how many people you bless. So I'm trying to do that now. So that is my next challenge, is to be able to help others, and especially the children. So anyone that's listening, if there's a child out there that needs it, come and train, and I will train you for free.
Check him out. Google Rami, R-A-M-I, Elite, E-L-I-T-E, Rami Elite. Or you can check out Rami Ibrahim. It's like Abraham, but with an I, Ibrahim. And what you'll find is a lot of information, videos of his fights, his history, all kind of things. But listen, what kind of offer is that? A multiple world champion saying, I'll teach your kid for free if you can't afford it. Hey, check out that offer. And for those who really enjoy the sport, or, you know, those type of things, you add a little Muay Thai with the champion with a great attitude. What words of advice for us mortals here, you know, facing the day-to-day life struggles? What is the lesson that you've learned that you could let everybody know?
There's many lessons that you can gain from martial arts, and especially from being a fighter in the ring. Like not giving up, it's okay to think that you want to quit, just as long as you don't quit. To understand there's no better time than now. You know, when it comes to training, people say, oh, I have to, you know, fix my, you know, my health, and I have to get in shape first before. No, just there's no better time than now. Go take care of your health. And I think that has a lot to do with us being happy in life. You know, everyone should go into fitness and try it out, because I think once you start taking care of your health, you will start feeling more better and more positive and more happier in life. And I think that's the best thing about martial arts.
All right.
It helps you physically, but more importantly, mentally.
Physical, mental, spirit. Thank you for joining our show, Rami.
Oh, it's my pleasure and honor. Thank you for having me here.
Hey, I hope you'll be back. Well, listen, everyone, stay tuned, because we will be talking to an author, Janet Benton, and her new novel, Lily DeJong, when we come back after this commercial break.
You are listening to In the Know with David O. Informative, substantive, intelligent talk radio on 860 AM WWDB.
If you've suffered an injury from a motor vehicle crash, trip and fall, construction, or work-related accident, contact the Padova firm to speak with John Padova himself. You've heard the name. That's because for over 25 years, John has been winning for his clients. John is dedicated to ensuring his clients are fully compensated. Call 215-893-0700. That's 215-893-0700. Don't suffer more than you have to. Call John Padova today. Help is on the way.
My friends, this is Joe Krause. You've heard me on Philadelphia Radio now for over 20 years, and you know I don't often endorse products or people unless they are real game changers. I want to tell you about Weinerman Pain and Wellness, located in Center City, Philadelphia. And at the end of this short personal endorsement, I want you to consider Weinerman Pain and Wellness. If you are recovering from an injury, if you or a family member has been diagnosed with a disorder that has stopped you in your tracks, or if you're like me, determined to learn about wellness while getting yourself prepared to stay healthy so you can enjoy the blessings of your family. Remember the name of this warm and caring location, Weinerman Pain and Wellness. Why should you consider Weinerman Pain and Wellness? Because they are who you expect them to be.
Weinerman Pain and Wellness, located at 100 South Broad Street, just south of City Hall. Call Weinerman Pain and Wellness at 215-988-9503. That's 215-988-9503. Call today.
Gracie Jiu-Jitsu begins with one basic premise. Technique trumps all. Proven techniques allow the weak to overcome the strong. Learn self-defense that works, all while improving your physical condition, mental outlook, and healthy lifestyle. Gracie Academy Philadelphia will help you reach your goals. Take two free classes and see for yourself. Gracie Academy, 1231 Bainbridge Street, Philadelphia. Call them 215-830-6501 or visit their website at phlbjj.com. Get started. Started at Gracie Academy, Philadelphia.
Today's broadcast is brought to you by the Philly Labor RX Injured Workers Pharmacy Network, featuring PPC Pharmacy, First Choice Pharmacy, and Precision Scripts, providing injured workers with premium products and services from the point of injury through the entire healing process. The Philly Labor RX Pharmacy Network cares about injured workers.
Introducing the YMCA. What, you already know the why? Or so you think. Sure, you know the why for a swim, a workout, even a game of hoops. But did you know we're more than that? We're a cause. When you take your jump shot at the why, someone else is getting job training. Take a cardio class while kids are in an after-school enrichment program. Practice your downward-facing dog as a teen practices her leadership skills. That's the why. We work with people no matter their age, income, or background, and give them the opportunity to learn, grow, and thrive, all with one simple goal in mind, to strengthen our community. And we've got so much more that does just that. So while you might think of the Y as that place for lifting weights, we're also about lifting entire communities. Introducing the Y. We're so much more than a place. We're a cause. Visit ymca.net/more.
All right, we are back. Listen, talking about fighters, we were talking to State Senator Stuart Greenleaf, who is fighting for criminal justice reform. You got to help him out. Check him out. How can we talk to those other state representatives and make sure that our judicial system, or especially in where you lose your freedom or your life, is fair, smart, intelligent? And then a man who takes it, into the ring or on the mat, Rami Ibrahim. Multiple world champion, just a solid guy, Hall of Fame fighter and trainer, and offering kids an opportunity right here on this show. Fantastic. And now a woman who has her first novel out, Janet Benton, about a young lady whose life circumstances in the 1880s, that of being an unwed mother, has her fighting for her life and for her child's life. Janet, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much.
Now, this is a kind of a, would you call it a historical novel? Because it's kind of set.
Yes.
So first of all, you've done an incredible amount of research in terms of accuracy.
Yeah, that's true.
H- how did you get into this in the first place? Because, you know, it's wonderful to hear a story, but the kind of putting it into, like, the proper historical context and all that type of stuff just makes it more real and relevant.
Yeah, I grew up in a small Connecticut town that had a history that I was never a part of because I didn't know my family's history very well. So because we came over, you know, a couple generations ago, and so I was always interested in history. And when I moved to Philadelphia, that was one of the things that I loved here. And then I had, and I've been a writer for a long time, but I had an infant. And I thought I could prepare for motherhood. I read, I talked to people. Then I went into labor, had my baby, and realized there was absolutely no way to prepare for this phenomenal, powerful transformation. And I started reading a little bit about the history of childhood, and I read a little bit about the history of unwed mothers and of the fact that social hatred usually separated them from their infants, and before there was a safe substitute for mother's milk, almost all of those infants died. So here I had a baby at my breast, and I'm thinking that if my circumstances were different and I lived in a different time or even today in a different country or circumstances, you know, my baby and I could be separated, and that would be pretty horrible.
Yeah, it was, shocking to me, and it shouldn't be because I'm a fairly well-read person, that back in the 1880s here in Philadelphia, so much depended on mother's milk, unwed mothers, providing nutrition to other people's children as a way of earning income, and then they'd have to feed their own children, and children born out of wedlock, oftentimes they couldn't be adopted, were sent someplace, and they weren't nourished.
Yeah,
and would die.
Right. Yep. Yep. And I think this book really resonates for women because Lily is a fighter. She's motivated by love for her infant girl to fight the prejudice that would separate them. It's my observation and my experience that motherhood is the most undervalued work in our society. Becoming a mother to a newborn is a massive transformation, a time of intense love and difficulty, and women risk everything to create the future. When you're pregnant, you don't know if your child's going to be have some kind of illness or tragedy, you know, at birth, die in your womb. You know, you're opening yourself up to anything. And the sacrifices that we make throughout our children's lives are profound. So this young woman started talking to me while I was nursing my daughter, who became Lily, telling me how unjust it was that the man who had, you know, with whom she'd become pregnant was wandering the streets free, and here she was nursing a stranger's infant while her own baby was with a poorer wet nurse, you know, with her own survival unlikely, because she was unable to find any other kind of work. It was typical at the time that an unwed mother would not be employable, certainly was unable to work a job and keep a newborn. You know, but really, how much better are we doing now when most mothers are separated from their infants very soon after birth in order to go back to their jobs?
Right, right. And you know, it's interesting to me because as you talk about, like, how relevant it is today, you know, it's surprising, but a woman who has given birth, who wants to, pump breast milk at the workplace, can be fired.
Yeah.
Can be fired. It's not protected under U.S. Constitution. It's not really protected under Obamacare. A portion of it is. Here in Philadelphia, you know, we passed a law, thankfully, that a woman cannot be harassed or fired for simply expressing breast milk in the workplace and should be provided a reasonable accommodation whenever possible. It's interesting because I actually came across a situation where I was an attorney, and I just figured, oh, this is protected by the Constitution. It wasn't. And, you know, the end result is that somehow the court decided that because men have breasts, I suppose, it's not under the equal protection. It's not a civil rights issue. And so here are men making these decisions about women's bodies and the functions. And, you know, just a really kind of relevant. Was that in your mind when you wrote this book, or was that completely not part of this story?
Well, one of the things that struck me as a mother was that breastfeeding is how humans have survived.
Yes.
And I had never seen it on television. You know, you hear about people getting kicked off of airplanes for nursing their children.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you can make a movie like Boxing Helena where you cut a woman's arms and legs off and stick her in a box and make her fall in love with her captor, but you can't show her breastfeeding.
Mm.
You know, this is a strange society where,
right,
where we're so insanely uptight about human function,
yes,
that keeps people alive. And not only that, but is a profound and beautiful bond between a mother and her infant.
Yes.
You know, they say that that bond between a mother and her infant is what creates empathy.
Hmm. Okay.
So, you know, keeping mothers and children together is extremely important, and supporting them. You know, I'm not saying every mother is perfect, but a lot of mothers would do a lot better if they had some more social support.
Yeah, let me just read a couple of the what would you call these reviews that were given? Quote, a powerful, authentic voice for a generation of women whose struggles were erased from history. A heart-smashing debut that completely satisfies. Jamie Ford, New York Times best-selling author of Hotel on the Corner of Bitter and Sweet. Also, a New York, number one New York Times bestselling author. This is Christina Baker Klein. She said, beautifully written, emotionally resonant, and psychologically astute. Lily DeJong is the story of an unwed mother in late 19th century Philadelphia who, facing peril at every turn, will do almost anything to keep her daughter alive. Benton turns a laser eye on her subject, exposing the sanctimony, hypocrisies, and pervasive sexism that kept women confined and unequal in the Victorian era, and that still bedeviled many women today. A gripping read. You have gotten great reviews from some really notable people. Must be very satisfying after all that effort and work.
It certainly is, and these are people who owe me nothing. I don't know them. The book also you know, was a library journal and an NPR Best Book of the Year.
Wow.
So,
do you have any idea it would be that well received when you wrote it, or were just writing it, you know, trying to get your message out, tell your story, and then voila, here's all these great accolades?
Yeah, I guess it does surprise me. You know, I work very, very, very hard at whatever I do. And so when I brought it out to find an agent and find a publisher, it all happened very quickly. But that's because I worked for 10 years on it. So,
wow,
you know, whenever
project.
I could. I mean,
right.
You know, I'm also a mom, and my yes. professional life is I'm a writer's mentor.
Mm.
I have a business called The Word Studio.
Mm.
I certainly hoped it would make me rich, which it didn't yet.
Well, maybe it will. I don't know.
You know,
listen, Mother's Day is coming up, right? It's quite the
right.
tribute for
yes.
For moms out there.
Yes, yes.
For folks who want to buy a Mother's Day present, or for someone who wants to read about the challenges of mothers and all that is contained within, you know, the wonderful love of mothers. Where can they find your book?
It's available wherever books are sold, your favorite independent bookstore,
mm-hmm.
Online at all the major retailers, Amazon, Barnes & Noble, Target. It's available in hardcover and also as an ebook. There's a large print edition, and there's also an audiobook that's available as an Audible recording, and also as CDs. And there's going to be a paperback out on July 10th.
Fantastic.
And who knows, there might, you know, one day there might be a TV show or a movie too.
Oh,
so,
fantastic.
Yeah.
Now, you have just come off of a book signing tour.
Yes, I've done about 75 events since the book came out about 11 and a half months ago.
Wow.
Yeah.
How's that been? Because now you go from author, you know, kind of writing this.
Very privately.
Yes. Now you're just out in the public.
Yes, it is a strange, it is a very, you have a lot of extremes.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. No, it's been amazing to talk to people. And, you know, honestly, when I'm addressing a room full of people and I can put tears in their eyes, that makes me pretty happy, because I feel like women and men, too, you know, have been very moved by the book.
Yes,
and
yes.
They have never really read a book like this that brings people so intensely close to that bond between a mother and an infant. And, you know, Lily is a really cool person. I mean, she struggles in an unfair situation to be as good a person as she can and to do justice to her child. And, you know, she meets a lot of really interesting characters.
Right.
One of the things that was so interesting about being in Philadelphia and writing the book based here is the institutions that I learned about. And you know, one of them was, you might be interested in this as a councilman, there used to be Blockley Almshouse. It later was called the Philadelphia Hospital. It was a huge, they said, disease-breeding swamp where UPenn and Children's Hospital of Pennsylvania are now. It was a vast complex of buildings, and there were thousands and thousands of people there at any one time, and it was so corrupt. There was a so-called board of guardians in charge, and they didn't have safeguards about things like you bring in 100 pounds of lamb and somebody walks out with 60 of them, you know, to sell privately or put in his own. They found there was an investigation during the right before my book is set there. And the treasurer fled to Canada and had to be extradited to be charged for these. I mean, it's hard to imagine the level of corruption. Well, maybe not. I don't know. But
well, you know, there's corruption and there's corruption.
Yeah,
and
this was so extreme. I mean, like,
very
you're supposed to go buy milk for the inmates, you know, and instead you go buy the rotten milk and water it down and keep the money, you know.
Unchecked corruption,
just
out of control.
Yeah.
Just, you know, it's terrible. You know, it's interesting, but one of my, my chief of staff, actually, who lives up in Chestnut Hill, was telling me that his mother would point out a place up on the hill and said that, you know, when the, I guess I'll call him the master of the house, got one of the employees pregnant, they would go up there and have the baby, and the baby would be sent out to the country someplace for an education or whatever, and then the employee would come back work for the master of the house.
Yeah. A lot of these stories we've heard to the point that they kind of make our eyes glaze over, sort of like Mother's Day, like, oh, isn't my mother sweet, right?
Right.
know, I love my mom, but, you know, women sacrifice for their children, isn't that nice? You know, well, it's not so nice, really. It's hard work. And and being separated from your infant is not a thing that our, you know, our eyes should glaze over about. It's a really profound phenomenon that I read about women, you know, in history and today who you don't get over that.
How did you come up with this character, Lily DeJong?
She I think is kind of a combination of a whole bunch of Victorian novels that I loved growing up.
Okay.
And, me and an imaginary person who just started forming in my mind. She's a Quaker, so she speaks with Quaker language. I imagined her having come from an old family in Germantown. I wanted to make her someone that you couldn't easily dismiss. She used to be a teacher. She's an intelligent young woman. And I felt that she had the power to be able to tell a story that would really transform people's understanding.
And she tells it in the first person.
Yes, it's her diary. This novel is her diary. Yeah. I love diary novels because it's like you're spying on somebody.
Right.
You know, you're reading their secret words.
Right. And at some point she said, well, I'm gonna get rid of this that I've written. But, of course, it's here in the book, right?
Yes, yes.
So that's clever. Anyway, listen, thank you so much for sharing with us your novel, Lily DeJong, L-I-L-L-I, D-E, and then J-O-N-G, a novel by Janet Benton, who joins us today.
Thank you so much, David.
All right. Well, listen, everybody, my guests have been State Senator Stuart Greenleaf, Rami Ibrahim, and Janet Benton, really kind of all on the theme of keeping the fight up. Tune in next week, 2 to 3, for In the Know with David O. Thank you for joining, and have a great week.
You've been listening to In the Know with David O on 860 AM WWDB. Tune in again next Tuesday at 2 p.m. for more informative, substantive, intelligent talk radio with Philadelphia Councilman David O.